Matthew, would you believe it? Another Metroid game is coming our way. Not Metroid Prime 4, but a follow-up to the 2021 Metroid Dread. A tweet said so. Do you believe it?
I mean, if it was on Twitter, then, I mean, sounds pretty obvious to me.
Well, let's dissect this. Welcome to We the People, your favorite weekly Nintendo podcast. My name is Michael Cottrell. I'm joined here by my brother, Matthew. Say hello to the nerds.
Hello, nerds.
So we're here to talk about the latest and greatest rumors. Man, it just seems like last week where someone else confirmed Super Mario Odyssey 2 from an email. We're on a hot streak, man.
Now Nintendo, we have something even more ironclad in the form of a tweet. A tweet, Michael.
Man, Nintendo is leaking just all over the place, apparently. But we'll get into the veracity of this claim, the likelihood of it, and all of that. So yeah, let's jump right in. The source comes from My Nintendo News, who got it from a Reddit post, who got it from a tweet. The tweet is from this guy.
Who got it from a Pokemon, Weedle.
It's just Weedle in the back alley. but yeah, at NWeedle on Twitter says that a new one's coming. And he was also apparently the same guy who leaked Metroid coming to the Switch in 2021. He said it was a 2D Metroid game made by Mercury Steam that was coming in 2021. Honestly, like that like insider info could have been like an educated guess too. Like I think with Metroid Samus Returns doing well on the 3DS, like come on, you know, they weren't going to try and like do it on Switch too. It was like it would have been a safe prediction to make, is what I'm trying to say, where you're like, okay, a company that has worked on a Metroid game might be working on another Metroid game for the next system. It's like, okay, it's not like rocket science or the craziest take in the world. But anyway, we are here to discuss the possibility of this claim. I don't really know or care like how reputable this leaker is. I'm not going to pretend like I know that much about the insider game. I mostly don't care, but I find it interesting nonetheless. Anyway, let's just jump right into it. Matthew, do you think this is real?
I'm a little back and forth on it. My heart wants to say yes, but my mind is telling me no. And really, maybe that's just because I'm so used to not getting Metroid games for what feels like long periods of time. So my inclination instinct is to say no. But I think it makes a lot of sense. You know, Metroid Dread is, to my knowledge, the best-selling Metroid game in the franchise. Now, my retort to that would be that it is on the, you know, a Nintendo platform with one of the biggest install bases that they've ever had. So, you know, it makes sense. But almost 3 million copies sold is nothing to scoff at. So I think it makes a lot of sense. Where I think I'm a little skeptical is, you know, game development typically takes, even for 2D platformers, you know, if we look at the jump from Donkey Kong Country Returns to Donkey Kong Tropical Freeze, granted two of the most expansive 2D platformers that we've ever had, but nonetheless, it was a 4-year time frame in between those video games. You know, you look at Metroid Dread, if this game's coming out in 2025, that more than likely means they would have had to make a decision on whether or not they wanted to move forward with a sequel very early on after this game's release, or maybe even before this game was released, because obviously game development concludes, you know, months before a game is actually sold at retail. So, you know, that's the only skepticism I have is did Nintendo get enough data early on that, okay, like this is doing incredibly well for us, we want to go ahead and greenlight a sequel. And then you also have to consider that, you know, Metroid Prime 4, I know it restarted development. I think actually the day we're recording this, I just saw a tweet that says it's been 4 years to the day that Metroid Prime 4 was announced to have restarted development with Retro Studios. So obviously that game is somewhere on the near horizon. I know most people are probably like, man, it's still probably years off because that's been the running joke with that game. But if you think after 4 years, I would be stunned if we don't hear anything about that game before or during E3. So you have to think that game's coming out as well. And it doesn't mean that two Metroid games can't come out in, you know, close proximity, but I just think they're probably on a similar timeline, or, you know, I would hope that Metroid Prime 4 would be coming out before 2025, but you know, I would think it's probably sometime either this year or next year, and that would put it pretty close to that game. And so, you know, I also think, like, would they really release two Metroid games so close together? I don't think they're opposed to it, but, you know, it just begs the question for me. So that's kind of my thoughts on that. What is your take?
I think it's basically a foregone conclusion that they're going to make another one of these. And if you look at the way that Nintendo games are made and why they make them, I think that this is pretty much, like, confirmed. Like, yeah, and in 2025 is very believable. After all, they did make Metroid Samus Returns in 2017 and then turn around and bring Metroid Dread in 2021, which was a much bigger leap to go from, like, 3DS to Switch than, you know, Switch to Switch 2 will be. I mean, we're talking, like, you know, a much smaller leap than going from, like, basically, like, 64 HD to, like, you know, a true HD system. So I think, yeah, I think this is being worked on. They might have even had a deal before this to, like, make a few Metroid games in conjunction with Nintendo. You know, a smaller studio like this would probably want to sign deals like that, and they have a history of doing this sort of work. You know, it's kind of funny looking into the company's history. They made the last three Castlevania games. It's interesting in one perspective, like, they've made both Metroid and Castlevania, the Metroidvania genre, as it were. So that's quite the resume to bring into this. But also, funny enough, Castlevania Lords of Shadow did not perform super well. I don't believe they've made a Castlevania game since. So they've kind of killed the Castlevania franchise and brought back the Metroid franchise. It's, like, really incredible stuff. But, you know, if we could only have one, I'll take Metroid, please. You know, we got enough medieval stuff. A little more sci-fi didn't hurt anybody.
I'll add to this because, you know, actually with you talking about this, the timeline between Samus Returns and Metroid Dread, it lines up nicely. I will say, too, probably what helps with the development of this type of game, the Metroidvania style, is that you're going with one big world where in a lot of instances you're revisiting the same areas you've been to before with new power-ups. And I think that lends itself well to not having to develop such a large game, you know, because on top of that, Metroid Dread is a game you can beat in like 8 to 10 hours. You know, so when I compared it to, you know, Donkey Kong Country Returns or Tropical Freeze, where, you know, each level was designed with a, you know, a unique background, like it was basically they were designing, I think I remember reading something about the team at Retro Studios was essentially designing levels the same way they did in Metroid Prime, but most of that level would just be what you see in the background. And if you ever took a look at the levels in Returns and Tropical Freeze, it's extremely detailed in the background. You know, it's not like Mario where you just have a still image, you know, or a still sky background or whatever. So yeah, yeah, those games are awful, but that's something we got to do a show about at some point where, you know, how is 2D Mario
they're
so just revered in the new...
They're the poor man's Donkey Kong Country.
Yeah, but they're, I don't know, just as many times as we played through those games, New Super Mario Bros. Wii is fine, but New Super Mario Bros. U, to me, my hot take is that is actually a bad game, but we'll save that discussion or table that for another time, but... But with what I was trying to say, though, is I think that probably lends itself well to them being able to develop a sequel in a short amount of time, especially because they'll probably be using the same exact engine, or not probably, they will be. The graphics will probably be the same because it sounds like it's going to be a Switch title as well. Although, I don't know, if it's coming out in 2025, you know, we might have new hardware by then, so, you know, maybe... That's an interesting thing to ponder with this discussion, but, you know, that's, you know, with what you brought up, that makes sense that, yeah, I could see this being like a shorter cycle in between games.
Yeah, and, I mean, the jump from Samus Returns to Dread was way more risky. I mean, because it's no secret that last year on the 3DS was rough. My goodness. And, I mean, like... Guilty as charged. I bought the game, but I did not finish it because at that point, everybody was done with the 3DS. The Switch had come out. It replaced the 3DS. They were doing this little game where they're like, oh, you know, the 3DS is, you know, we're still going to support the 3DS. The Switch is just another pillar. And they did the same thing with the Game Boy when the DS came out. Man, that last year of games just suffered tremendously. I mean, Alpha Dream went bankrupt. The Mario and Luigi Bowser's Inside Story, the remake, didn't sell well. And people are saying it didn't sell well because it was a remake of a DS game that you could play on 3DS. I don't think that's as much the case. Sure, that might be a factor, but like literally everything in that last year was just performing terribly, you know? And we get to, this brings us to Metroid, where, you know, Nintendo has said basically nothing about the sales of the game. VG Charts estimates like 600,000 units sold or something like that. And so like, yeah, I mean, it's, the choice to like make another one after that was very interesting, which makes me wonder if the deal with Mercury Steam was like, you know, let's make three Metroid games and see how it goes. But regardless, now that this game has sold many times in excess of that estimated 600,000, of course they're going to make a follow-up. And here's why. The way that Nintendo chooses on, you know, what games to make is a variety of factors. One factor is, of course, like how popular it is. Smash Bros. Is too popular to not get developed. Sakurai could say, I'm retiring, I want nothing to do with the series, and they are going to make another Smash Brothers. You know, in fact,
yeah, it's like, this has okay, been, cool, man.
Yeah, this has been the story with Super Smash Bros. Like, Sakurai wanted Melee to be the last one, and then Iwata's like, we're making Brawl. You wanna come make it? We'll literally let you do whatever you want. You can hire all your own people. And, you know, he sure did that. And that's been, like, the story with that. So there's certain games like Smash, Mario Kart, Animal Crossing, Super Mario. Regardless, they will find someone to make that game. For basically everything else that's not in that, like, top shelf Nintendo properties and, you know, just to recount those somewhat quickly, the games that Nintendo truly produces in-house, like in the EPD sphere, we've got 2D Mario, 3D Mario, a casual games sector, Animal Crossing, mobile games, and Donkey Kong is rumored to be coming back to that, and then we've got Zelda and Splatoon. And I think that covers just about everything that Nintendo makes, like, internally. The rest of the stuff that they make is from, like, partners. You know, HAL Laboratory makes Kirby games, and they keep making Kirby games because they own a chunk of the Kirby IP. And, you know, same with Fire Emblem. Fire Emblem, you know, Nintendo could have Intelligent Systems make something that would sell five times more, but they don't necessarily know what that is. Fire Emblem is something that Intelligent Systems wants to make, and it's profitable enough, so they continue making it. And, you know, it all paid off when they made that sweet, sweet iPhone game, JPEG Gambling Emblem. You know, yeah, I mean, I spent $80 trying to get Hector. I'm not proud of it. I'm not proud, but I did end up getting him. But yeah, so for the rest of the game, these games like Metroid, they need an outside partner. For Star Fox, they need an outside partner. So on and so forth. Monolith Soft is another example of, like, you know, they make Xenoblade games because they're profitable enough. And, you know, I don't think you could, like, hand them Metroid and say, go make a Metroid game and have them, like, you know, do it well. They're not really built for that. So then we come to this game with Mercury Steam. And with that kind of, like, outer barrier of, like, partnerships that Nintendo has, sometimes they own the company, like with Next Level Games making Luigi's Mansion. They're you know, Mercury Steam, if they play their cards right, could eventually be acquired by Nintendo. And yeah, this is just one of those situations where there is a developer that is suited for the task. They've got the resume. They've made Castlevania games. They've made a couple of successful Metroid games, and they're willing to make it. They're probably cheap compared to, like, you know, like hiring someone like Square Enix or Namco to make the game. And, you know, you've got kind of a proven track record where even, like, Nintendo working with, what was it, Platinum to make Metroid Prime 4 didn't work out. Star Fox with Platinum didn't work out great either. And so, you know, we have a game series that Nintendo wants to keep alive. They actually just came out with a Samus toy this year. There's lots of opportunity for multimedia stuff with Metroid. And yeah, now we've got a team that could conceivably make that. And, you know, it'll work. And so that'll keep working until, you know, either party is not interested. I think if we start to see the sales slump with multiple games in a row, they'll probably go away. But, you know, it's a good deal because Nintendo EPD can have a lot of creative control. You know, they can kind of puppeteer some aspects of the game, and then they don't actually have to make it, and they get to profit off of it. So, you know, it's a win for everybody.
Yeah, and Metroid, I think, provides something very valuable to Nintendo that they don't have in a lot of their other IP, which is diversity. Because a lot of Nintendo's IP these days is more catered to family-friendly or younger people. You know, it didn't feel like that back in the day. You know, you and I always talk about how, you know, games like even the Mario franchise, or especially Donkey Kong Country or whatever it was, Star Fox, it didn't feel like... It felt like it was more designed to be catered to people of all ages. And in some respects, even people, older people, you know, not just family-friendly or younger people, but it feels like most of their stuff is directed in that direction now. And it's interesting because I think Metroid is one of those properties for them that gives them the diversity to attract people of an older audience to the Nintendo platform. I think that's the value they see in having Bayonetta as a Nintendo exclusive as well. And I think, like you said, Metroid has a lot of multimedia potential as well. Kind of similar to how they're doing the Last of Us TV show. You know, at some point I could see something like that being done for Metroid. I think it's the perfect Nintendo property to turn into some kind of film or television series or animated series, more so than a lot of other Nintendo's franchises. You know, they made an anime out of F-Zero, and, you know, even though F-Zero is not quite as successful at franchises, a lot of what Nintendo's done, it lends itself better to that type of media more than a lot of Nintendo's other franchises. But I wanted to touch on something too. You know, when you brought up Samus Returns, I had no idea. This game came out in September of 2017. That puts it at what, 6 months after the Nintendo Switch was released?
It was competing with Super Mario Odyssey and Breath of the Wild and Splatoon 2.
Yeah, honestly, it came out, like, yeah, Odyssey came out in October. Samus Returns came out in September. And Breath of the Wild was already out by then. I can't remember if Splatoon 2 came out in the first year, but if it did, it was out by then. Mario Kart
Splatoon 2 was...
I can't...
ARMS was out. Splatoon 2 was out. Like, I mean, they had the lineup. And people keep talking about, like, you know, the year of 2017 is, like, the year of legend for Nintendo Switch. Because, I mean, the real secret is they moved a bunch of Wii U games that were done or near complete over to the Switch. But, you know, that's neither here nor there. But, yeah, I mean, they had this kind of legendary lineup that was just off the charts. I mean, you know, banger after banger. I mean, just within that 1 year, you could see yourself spending like $180 on like must-have games. I mean, and like, I don't consider myself much of a Splatoon fan, but like Splatoon 2 was a must-have. ARMS was a good time. Yeah, I mean, and then they release a 3DS game in the midst of all that. I mean, they truly sent it out to die. And I think Nintendo knows what they're doing, which is probably why they went ahead and commissioned another Metroid game, because, yeah, I mean, they know they're not stupid. Like, they said the same thing when the Nintendo DS came out. They're like, the DS is a pillar to go along the Game Boy Advance because we don't know if the DS will flop yet. And likewise, I mean, honestly, it's kind of cute when you think about it. They didn't know if the Switch was going to be successful, and they might have had to continue leaning on the 3DS. And if you remember looking back far back, I'm pretty dang sure that I saw an interview with the Pokemon company where, like, we're not sure we're going to make Switch games. You know, like, because they had been selling just fine on the 3DS, and it's a risk for them to jump to a new system. And so, so yeah, Metroid Samus Returns was sent out to die on a dying system, just like Mario and Luigi.
The only point I was going to say initially with all that is that it still managed to sell over 500,000 units, which is not a lot by today's standards whatsoever, and especially with a large install base that the 3DS had. But I think given the circumstances, I would say that's pretty good. And I just read an article while you were talking before about it, that it sold in Japan, it sold through 70% of its initial shipment, which is really good. So I think Nintendo actually had valuable data on the release of that game saying, you know, given the circumstances, this game actually performed a lot better than they probably expected, given that it's Metroid on top of all things.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting because, like, you got to take a lot of that stuff with a grain of salt. There's a lot of games that publishers will play when they talk about things, because they're not going to say, they're not usually going to say, like, yeah, this game bombed, dude. This game sucked. You know, it's like with Xbox. During like the whole like PS4, Xbox One cycle, you would never hear the amount of units that Xbox sold. And you still don't, because they're not winning. And the number's embarrassing, so they're not going to tell you the exact number. So they have to estimate it on places like Wikipedia, where, you know, Nintendo just like publishes that stuff, because it's a point of pride. It's a point of like, hey, come invest in us. We're doing something special. And, you know, for Metroid, the only official word that they gave on it was that it, quote, like, sold firmly, which, you know, doesn't really mean anything. But yeah, I mean, assuming that it came close to a million, that would put it in the top 50 3DS games. I mean, that would put it in line with other games like Triforce Heroes, Mario & Luigi Paper Jam, Miitopia, Star Fox 64 3D, and those are all like respectable selling games. So like, yeah, I mean, I think, you know, they probably had expectations on it based on it being a Metroid game. You know, it's like, I don't think they look at Metroid and they're like, you know, why didn't you sell the, you know, 3 million copies like Donkey Kong did? It's like, they don't expect Donkey Kong to do as well. I think even like, they've probably grown to know that like remakes generally don't sell as well. You know, like it's a crime how much worse Heart Gold and Soul Silver sold compared to like the rest of the Pokemon games that were on the DS. You know, likewise, Fire Emblem Echoes, which was like way better than Awakening or Birthright and Conquest. Way better, and just did not sell anywhere near as well. And, you know, there's a variety of factors that go into that. One of it being, like, the later games did not sell as well because, you know, there was just this fatigue around the 3DS, and, like, we were ready. You know, iPhone was in full swing. The level of, like, immersion that you could have in your pocket had really, like, gone off the charts from, like, the release of the 3DS to 2017. I mean, like, I think in 2017 or 18, like, people were able to play Fortnite on their iPad. And so it's like, it's just a different game now. But yeah, I mean, I think like based on all that, I'm sure it did very well for a Metroid game. And it's like, you got to ask yourself, like, Nintendo looks at Intelligent Systems and they're like, oh, that's cute. You made a Fire Emblem game that finally, like, you know, broke even. You know, they could just tell Intelligent Systems to make nothing but Paper Mario games, or make Paper Mario and Paper Zelda, and those games would easily outperform Fire Emblem every time. But, you know, true to what you said, Matthew, it is important for people to look at the Switch from the outside in, and even though like the individual game might not sell as well, it's important to have variety, and that's why they still try and get M-rated games on the console. They might not sell as well as they will on the other platforms like PlayStation 5 and PC and so on, but it's important for that variety to be there. And you go back to this multimedia thing with Metroid, if they get some kind of movie or some kind of TV show, that's going to be great for, you know, all the people that, you know, have purchasing power, which not the kids. And, you know, you get dad in on Metroid. Maybe he remembers playing Super Metroid as a kid. He buys a Switch with the newest 2D Metroid. And then, you know, his kids play it too. He buys a bunch of games on there. Like, you know, it just helps the ecosystem.
Yeah, no, I 100% agree. And the thing is, diversity has always been important to me. And that's why I used to get really upset when I remember there was an interview done sometime. I don't know. It had to be when the Wii U was out. But Miyamoto was talking about how he gets asked a lot about another F-Zero game, and he always feels like F-Zero has been completed, and then people will piggyback off of his comments and say, you know, what does F-Zero offer that Mario Kart doesn't? But to me, that's the problem I have with a lot of people's thinking, is they don't see the value in diversity. While Mario Kart, yes, everybody loves it. It's like you and I discussed on one of our podcasts that Mario Kart is probably Nintendo's most valuable franchise at this point. I think you had it as your number one thing on your tier list of important franchises to Nintendo. But at the same time, I used to like how Nintendo had two different styles of racing games, because what Mario Kart gives you is not what a more realistic or mature racing game is going to give you. You know, just like if you played Mario Kart, you're not getting the same experience that you would get from Need for Speed or Gran Turismo, for example. And so that's what I always appreciated, how F-Zero while it's another racing game and while we have Mario Kart, it's still offering you a different experience and creating more diversity. Because I have friends, you and I both, like, we have a friend named Jacob who, while he likes Mario Kart, he much prefers F-Zero. I'm the same way. As much as I love Mario Kart, if a new F-Zero came out, I'd be all over that. I there's just certain things I really like about that game where it's just down to pure racing. There's no weapons involved. If you fall off the track, you die. Like, there's no Lakitu to bring you back. You're just retired from life, you know? So it's just, there's so many cool things about it. So I just think that diversity is something really important. And I'm glad they're starting to embrace Metroid with that, because I think there's a lot of possibilities of where they can take Metroid and the type of fan base that they can attract with that, you know? So, but I do want to pose a question to you because, you know, something I was thinking about is that given that this is likely to happen and we've got Metroid Prime 4 coming, does this mean that the, you know, periods of limbo that we've experienced with Metroid are now over? Those are the days of the past, because it feels like Metroid's here to stay. Now, I would also retort to that. It's kind of interesting to me that people put Metroid in the same conversation as a Star Fox or an F-Zero, when Metroid's actually had a lot of titles that people conveniently forget about just because they're simply not fans of those games. You know, you think of Metroid Other M, that came out, I don't know, 3 years after Metroid Prime 3. It wasn't that long after. You know, you've gotten some games that I know people hate to remember them, but like Metroid Prime Federation Force, you know, so you could actually argue that Metroid has never experienced this long period of being in limbo, kind of like, I mean, heck, even I think Donkey Kong has experienced bigger gaps than Metroid has, if you really think about it. So, but you know, to my original question, do you think Metroid is kind of here to stay? And do you think we can start expecting that we're going to get regular releases in the franchise now?
I think that as long as there is a developer who is up to the task and the games keep selling well, that, like, yeah, I mean, it's probably here to stay for a while. You look at the gaps in Metroid, and I mean, they really just kind of follow that cadence. Retro makes three Metroid games in a row, and there's other, like, Prime games to kind of, like, supplement that, with Prime Hunters and Prime Pinball to, like, kind of spread that love to the DS, too.
Oh, I forgot about those.
And you
got to
think, like, going into the DS, Metroid Prime was, like, you know, it was the hotness. Like, Metroid was on fire at that point. But we have quite the gap between there and Other M. The gap that forms after Other M is because a couple of factors. Number one being that that game bombed. That game, like, just did nothing. Did not move the needle at all. And I don't know what it was, but I mean, and even so, like, Retro was making Donkey Kong Country Returns, and then they would move on to do Tropical Freeze, but Other M was made by Team Ninja and at the time Nintendo SPD, which has been rolled into EPD. So kind of the same relationship that Mercury Steam has with Nintendo, that was with Team Ninja, except this game on the Wii just totally bombed. I don't even think it broke a million sales. And so, like, obviously Team Ninja isn't interested in making a follow-up. They've got, you know, other things that they can do to do better. And Nintendo's not as interested to produce another one of those. And so that's where we get that, I believe, 7-year gap in between. Metroid Prime Federation Force came out in 2016, which, yeah, it is pretty funny that, like, after 6 years of silence, that's the game that they came out with. And poor Next Level Games, man. They were making Luigi's Mansion, probably doing super well with the amount of sales that they had, and then they got stuck with a Metroid game. But yeah, the Metroid Federation, I want to play that at some point. I think, like, people are very ravenous about Metroid. It's like, I get it, like, that you want, like, a fully fledged super HD Metroid game, but I also think, well, a multiplayer Metroid would be cool. I never have actually gave it a shot, but I am a sucker for co-op games.
Yeah, I was gonna say, like, to an extent, I totally agree with you that the Metroid fan base is extremely ravenous, and I feel like they almost work against themselves sometimes, because if a Metroid game is not exactly what they want, they almost advocate for the game doing poorly, which to me just works against the ultimate goal that you should want as a Metroid fan. But, you know, it's circular logic. But the thing where I can kind of understand them in the middle is that, you know, me being an extremely huge Donkey Kong Country fan, like it's my favorite game franchise. You know, when I remember when they announced Returns, and I was really upset about it. The game looked fun, but I just felt like they took Donkey Kong Country's title, slapped it on a new game, but it didn't feel or look like I expected Donkey Kong Country to look. You know, I felt like the games in the Super Nintendo era, they went for a style that was like realistic and cartoony at the same time, whereas the Retro Studios games just went for more of a cartoony style. At least they did with Country Returns. They also, you know, got rid of the Kremlings, which for me, like loving the Kremlings, I thought they were some of the best enemies that Nintendo ever designed. The creativity between them and the roles they played, I thought they were really good enemies. And, you know, King K. Rool is probably my favorite villain. He wasn't present anymore. You know, I just felt like the creative direction they were going in with that game, it made me really upset. But at the end of the day, I'm like, hey, it's Donkey Kong Country. I want it to do well. It's probably going to be an incredibly fun time, so let me support it anyway. Whereas I feel like Metroid fans, they just, you know, they, like, I remember when Federation Force was coming out, they were just really upset that, oh, this is what you're going to do with Metroid Prime. And it's sad because there probably is a really fun game buried beneath all that hatred for people who have never played it. And, you know, it brings me to another point where, you know, you brought up Other M and how poorly that game did. And you know, I want to go on, like, not a rant, it's not going to take me long, but this is something I've expressed to you, the frustration I have with the Metroid fan base when it comes to Other M all the time, that I just want to vocalize here, that I really, it gets on my nerves so much how much people hate that game. Because I understand that it didn't turn out the way that Metroid fans wanted it to. But the thing is, first of all, Other M is actually a fun game. I played through the entire game, and while, yes, the story's terrible, the voice acting's terrible, the dialogue's terrible, it's all bad, there's still a fun game to be had there. I think they had a lot of cool concepts. There are some things that are not fun. Like, there's some segments where you have to point the Wii remote for the camera and lock onto stuff on the screen, and sometimes it's incredibly hard to find, and there's some dumb stuff about it, don't get me wrong. But I would say it's at least a 7 or an 8 out of 10. I think it's a fun game. Well, the thing is that these Metroid fans, they hate the game, and so much of the criticism is directed at Team Ninja. And people don't understand. This is something like I really need people to understand about Other M, is that Team Ninja had nothing to do with the story. They had absolutely 0% to do with the story.
Well, and whose idea do you think it was to constrict the game to only the Wiimote? You think that was a Nintendo's idea, or you think that was Team Ninja's?
Yeah, just like you remember with Donkey Kong Country Returns, you know, Miyamoto gave them the idea to make Donkey Kong blow, and it was just to add another functionality of the Wii remote to the game. So and I remember the people at Retro Studios recanting that story at the time were just like, what? And you notice in Tropical Freeze, that feature's conveniently missing because it was dumb. And it was just a way for them to
look at the Wii remote. At some point, people was like, it doesn't matter what Miyamoto says. And like, and that's the problem with these sort of like prolific, almost like worshipped game designers. And, you know, just like sometimes they have dumb ideas and like, you know, it just reminds me a lot of George Lucas. Like, he made that original Star Wars trilogy and he became a god. He became like infallible. And so when he's going to make episode one and he comes up with Jar Jar Binks and he comes with the droids and, you know, with all this stuff, no one in the room is, you know, bold enough to question him. It's like, maybe we're going a little too far here, guys. And it's the same thing with Miyamoto. That is one of the funniest stories in all of game development. He just comes in and he's like, what if he,
yeah.
What if he like, wouldn't that be cool? Wouldn't that be awesome?
The guy telling the story was like, I remember he was saying how everybody was just like, what is going on right now? Because they just had no idea what he was doing. And then, you know, it made sense. And listen, Miyamoto has some fantastic ideas at the same time. You know, Donkey Kong 64, when Rare thought it was a good idea to put real guns in the game, and Donkey Kong had a shotgun, and, you know, Miyamoto took a pencil and put it to paper and designed the coconut gun, you know, just a like a bazooka looking gun legendary. With a tree leaf at the end of it. And that's such a good iconic. Idea when you think about it. Like, for him to just do that off the cuff, off rip, like that's what makes part of what makes Miyamoto a legend. But, you know, again, like while some of his ideas are fantastic, others are terrible. But just to hit home on the other
end. He's a legend. He's not a god. And the absolute worst part of Donkey Kong Country Returns is that you have this awesome, rhythmic, amazing platformer with just the most impeccable, surgically precise level design. And they have you constantly stopping to go, because there might be a puzzle piece there. It is infuriating that something as dumb as that could like taint a game that is as close to perfect as Donkey Kong Country Returns is.
Yeah, and it's funny that you mentioned that, because I honestly think that's the main reason why people automatically always say that Tropical Freeze is a better game. But I just think Country Returns, because of mechanics like that, it really messed with the pacing of that game, especially because that Donkey Kong Country, what makes it so great is its emphasis on kinetic movement. And so when you're constantly making the player stop to blow on flowers, you know, it's just silly, you know. So but anyway, just the original point with Other M, though, it really bothers me that people, you know, seem to not blame Nintendo at all for the direction they took Other M, when literally that was entirely them. The creative choices that were made in that game, as far as the story, how the characters interact, the things they say to each other, that was all Nintendo. Team Ninja just made the game, the gameplay. That's literally it. And so it's something that's always bothered me, because I think that game gets so much unjust criticism when buried beneath all that. Just like I said with Federation Force, I don't know for certain with that game, but Other M is actually a fun game. I think it's worth playing. I enjoyed it. I, for me, like us being Nintendo fans, I feel like as a Nintendo fan, you have to be able to enjoy a game devoid of a story, because most Nintendo games are. You know, we had a friend of ours who told us he just finished Super Mario Odyssey and was like, "Nah, I didn't like it because like the story's just stupid." And it's like, yeah, but the game is pure fun. And that's what I felt like with Other M. It's not the most fun game, but it's fun enough where I wanted to continue playing it and finish the game. So I just had to get that off my chest, because like sometimes how divisive the Metroid fan base is really bothers me, because like if it's not exactly what they envision themselves getting, it's something they automatically don't like. They killed Other M because of that. They killed Tropical Freeze because of that. They killed Federation Force because of that. And it's just annoying, because like it's okay for things to go outside the scope of what you think is reasonable, you know? Like, I mean, I don't know, man. We're Donkey Kong fans. Look at games like Jungle Beat or Donkey Konga, you know? Like, I didn't like playing Jungle Beat with the drums, but dang it, that game's still fun. It's still great, you know, because I gave it a chance, you know? So anyway, I just had to vent that, Michael. It's been in my system for 10 plus years now.
Yeah, I never played Other M, but it's like if you, you know, like, and obviously it didn't turn out as great as it could have. And, you know, sometimes you miss, you know, but like, do you really want to play the same exact Metroid game every 2 years? Or do you want them to take a risk? I mean, we wouldn't have Metroid Prime if they always like went forward with that assumption, then they never would have made Prime. They would have just done a 2D Metroid game on GameCube with like 3D graphics. So you know, you got to take those L's sometimes, and it's like, you know, you got to look at the picture holistically. But you know, and it's like, yeah, the story from Other M is bad, but like, take it from a guy who's been playing Fire Emblem for the last like decade, like, you know, you could still enjoy a game with, even though it's got a awful anime trope boilerplate story with nothing, no interesting characters. I mean, you know, I like, did that affect how much I enjoyed the gameplay portions of Three Houses and, well, Three Houses is great characters, just a stupid story, but I digress, you know? Like,
I just have to say with Fire Emblem, you know, I've never really played the games like that. I've never had an interest personally, but from any time I've seen Fire Emblem games advertised, they always just play out like a bad Funimation dub of a Shonen Jump anime, you know, where there's just random dumps of, there's just random dumps of exposition and, you know, it's bad voice acting and cheesy lines. And
if you're wondering what my take on the latest Fire Emblem is, it's that the gameplay seems to be pretty solid. I like the systems and the amount of customization that you have over your characters. They're bringing a lot of cool RPG elements in that I imagine will break the game, as every customization element has always done in Fire Emblem games. But Fire Emblem wasn't always weeb trash. And I call it weeb trash because, like, you know, I have no problem with anime. Grew up on Dragon Ball, Yu Yu Hakusho. I just showed my kids the English opening to Yu Yu Hakusho. Perfect. I mean, perfection.
Chef's kiss.
And then every time they saw another anime character, they're like, "Daddy, this is the guy from the show." I'm like, "No, no." It's just like, that's everybody. There's like a million shows that look like that. But, you know, it's, I love Full Metal Alchemist. I've watched it a million times. It's Attack on Titan, One Punch Man, you know. But the stuff that just gets on my nerves is like Fire Emblem. The characters in this one specifically are just the most boring, anime tropey, goofy, dumb, like, just surface level characters of just... Yeah, I mean it's rough, but the gameplay is pretty good. The graphics are beautiful, and you know, there's not a whole lot of AAA turn-based strategy that you get, so you just got to take what, you know, dinner served. You might not always like what mom's cooking, but the kitchen's closed for the rest of the night.
You're not always gonna like mom's spaghetti, but I was gonna say, you gotta, now with all this, you know, stuff you're talking about the game, you got to do a review for the channel at some point, you know.
Yeah, if I finish it, and that's kind of the funny thing, is like I have no motivation to go into it, because at least Three Houses like seemed like it had a good story, you know. When you get to the end of it, you're like, oh well, I kind of was expecting a little more than that. But you know, at least there was like some elements of it, like, ooh, like you see Dimitri with the eye patch in the trailer and you're like, what happened to him in the time skip? But like, yeah, this one is just a goofy story that's just trying to capitalize on the success of Fire Emblem Heroes by stuffing as many Fire Emblem characters into this game as they can get away with, which is pretty corny. And I, as a Fire Emblem fan, I don't even like it. And the thing is, Fire Emblem wasn't always weeb trash. It was weeb trash starting with like Awakening and going forward. And because Awakening kind of saved the series, they're like, we got to keep doing this more anime. It's just like, they get weird. And it's all this like strange, you know, like I said, I like anime. It's a good art form. There's a brand of anime that is just lame, and I want no part in it. And it's just infected my precious Fire Emblem. Gone are the days of genealogy and, you know, I love Fire Emblem 7, Thracia, and, you know, we just have, they made Korn, you know, Korn, he's barefoot. He's got a suit of armor and he's barefoot. Dragon powers.
You'll have to, you know, like I said, you'll have to do some Fire Emblem review at some point. Just make sure you mention the random exposition dumps. But I did want to
pose so far. I only like Axe Guy, but that's about it.
Yeah,
I don't even know his name.
Yeah, well, viewers of this or listeners, you'll have to be on the lookout for that'll be a YouTube exclusive. But I do want to ask you one more question, just in relation to Metroid. Here is, you know, does this kind of, you know, again, this isn't, you know, to the original point of this podcast, you know, this is all based on what a leaker saying. We're just debating the validity of it or how likely we think it is. But assuming this to be true, assuming there is a sequel to Metroid Dread coming out, we obviously have Metroid Prime 4 coming out. But given how quickly a sequel to Metroid Dread could have been greenlit, again, assuming this report is true, does that give you some sort of hope to the idea of other franchises coming back you know, like Star Fox, like F-Zero, like Earthbound. I know Earthbound's always one of those for you. You're like, yeah, that's never coming back. I've always said I could see like a Pokemon Let's Go style remake of those games, not where you do anything with the Nintendo Switch controllers, but just that they could, you know, reinvent the game just in like a 3D environment, but it's the same game as it was before. But anyway, I just think, what do you think of the likelihood of seeing some of those franchises that seem to be in and out, you know, being given a few more chances here?
Yes and no. I mean, like, they'll continue to do what they've been doing, which is finding partners to make games that kind of make sense. You know, they formed a partnership to make Dynasty Warriors skins of Fire Emblem and Hyrule, the Zelda properties, and those are seem to be doing fine enough. And you know, they have to pump out, like, I think there's a contract that they have with the devil that, where they're required to make 50 Dynasty Warriors per year. And so, you know, they'll keep doing that. And, you know, as far as other franchises go, it kind of takes the right person with the right idea, and it has to be profitable for both parties involved. And that's where it gets a little sticky. I mean, you know, I don't know how much money they have to give over to Nintendo, or if Nintendo's collecting all the profits or most of the profits, or how exactly this works. But Ubisoft was not very excited with how Mario plus Rabbids 2 Sparks of Hope did, which is a fantastic game. I mean, really puts the first one to shame in a lot of ways. Just an incredible upgrade from the first one. But yeah, I mean, didn't sell very well. Alpha Dream went bankrupt, even though they had been making steady, fantastic Mario games. And so it's got to be the right fit. It seems like either Nintendo or Platinum are probably burnt out on working together. You know, they did that Astral Chain game that did okay, and then between Star Fox Zero and the failed Metroid Prime thing, I think they're probably not super excited to continue working together. Or was it Namco that worked on Metroid Prime 4? I might be getting that wrong, but
yeah,
you know,
it was Namco originally, and then Retro gotcha. Studios picked okay. up development. So,
but you know, you get my point. Like, we're, you know, there's a lot of things. Like, game development is incredibly difficult. Nintendo's probably one of the most obnoxious IP holders to work with. But what I would say that gives me hope for more of these sort of deals to be inked is that Nintendo has realized something, and this is really, really important. An important, like, paradigm shift for how they run their business. Up until now, Nintendo has been a manufacturer of products, and they have made, video games and consoles, and they run kind of like a marketplace within that whole sphere. What they've realized in the last few years, and what they've started to capitalize on, is that, like, no, wait, we're not as much like a game company. We are an IP company. And I think that the more that they shift in that thinking, we're like, you know, it doesn't matter if Fire Emblem is a way bigger mobile game than it ever will be on console, because the money's there. And you know what? The mobile hype will help the trading card game, will help the video games that we do have. And it's like, it doesn't matter if Pokemon's more of like a merchandise company, like a plushy toy company, than it is like a video game company. Cause, like, you know, all that stuff kind of feeds itself. And so the more that Nintendo starts to kind of work in this way, the more they're going to figure out how to work with people in these sorts of deals where they reach out to someone who, you know, I think Mercury Steam is in Spain. So it's like, you've got time zone differences, you got language barriers, all sorts of stuff, but they're developing these processes where they've got a few people that are on that project that are managing it. They're checking up on it, making sure that it, like, stays faithful to the IP, that it's a good video game. I mean, you know, they have so many people at Nintendo that can kind of verify whether a game concept's going to work. And I think that they can, if they can scale this, then they could have an incredible lineup of games, almost to the point where, like, it almost doesn't matter if you have third parties. Like, of course, that will always be an important piece to, like, have the heavy hitters. Like, if they could get Call of Duty back on Nintendo consoles, that would be huge. But at the same time, like, Switch is doing fine without it. And if you could just get more games like this, especially your F-Zeros, your your Metroids and your Star Fox, like some of those games that reach an older demographic, to just give it a little more of a wide appeal. Like, I think you're sitting pretty at that point, but you got to figure out, you know, who is the right developer for the right price and for the right scope of project. This works out great because 2D Metroid is less of a demand than 3D Metroid, and they've got a good developer with a good pedigree, with a proven track record to do it. Everyone else will be kind of a risk. But you know, what's interesting is that this got me thinking, about, you know, we were talking about Donkey Kong Country Returns, and I was thinking about the Game Boy version of the game that was, co-developed by Monster Games, I believe is the name. And, they actually had also helped on Donkey Kong Country Tropical Freeze. I don't know what capacity, but they helped nonetheless. This company obviously hasn't made any other Donkey Kong games. What they have made is a bunch of NASCAR games, a bunch of racing sim games. And, like, you know, how crazy would it be for a company like that to go and make an F-Zero game? You know, they've got like a long history of working with licenses. You know, they've made a bunch of NASCAR games, and their specialty is racing simulation. What's to say they couldn't ink some sort of deal with Nintendo to make a very realistic, I say that in air quotes, but like kind of a realistic feeling F-Zero game? It's like, that might be a possibility.
I think that there's a lot of options that they have to play with here, kind of like you said, because I think they have developers, kind of like they had Mercury Steam, where they can take a stab at a Metroid game and just see if it works, and it doesn't take any resources away from Nintendo's development, you know, and their in-house development studios, where they can keep doing what they do, and they can just throw some things at the wall and see if it sticks. You know, because you mentioned how, you know, or we talked about Mercury Steam works on Metroid, you know, Platinum Games, you know, took a stab at Star Fox, which, you know, I'm really hoping Star Fox Zero gets ported to the Switch, because I think if it does, it'll end up selling pretty darn well. It won't blow away the charts, but could it pass 2 million? I think so. You know, and maybe add some things to that game and throw it on there. And I'd like to see it get, you know, an opportunity on a better selling platform, you know. But I just think, you know, I look back to, I have to look up the validity of this. I can't remember if it's from these developers, but I believe the developers of Need for Speed actually pitched working on a F-Zero game for Nintendo for the Wii. And I think it was something they were considering at the time, but they decided to pass on it. But that's what I wish that they would allow for more opportunities like that. Because for me, when you have an install base like the Switch, and you've seen what wonders it's done for Metroid with Metroid Dread, it would just be nice before we move on to the next hardware, because who knows if the next system after this is going to sell anywhere near as well. I think history with Nintendo would tell us it's probably not going to. And so I would really like them, before we're done with this, and obviously that probably would have had to happen already now, because, you know, if nobody's already actively working on a game, it's probably not coming out for the Switch if they started tomorrow. But I just hope that they have realized some of those possibilities with studios that have wanted to take up the mantle with development of some of their IP, and just see if it works, because I think all it can do is tell you, like, if they did make another Star Fox or they did make another F-Zero and it flopped, that, like, yeah, we probably can't do... This is probably unsalvageable at this point, because if it didn't sell well on the Switch, it's probably not going to sell well anywhere else. You know, but I think this is the time where you have the ability to find out, has it been about the install base or has it been about the franchises? Because, like I said, I feel like a Star Fox game or an F-Zero game on the Switch would sell well enough to justify continuing to make games in those franchises. So I really hope that Metroid can kind of act as a pioneer, in the sense that some of these smaller Nintendo franchises that they've stopped working on themselves, that there is still hope for them to, you know, have an attempt at a new game in the series, to see, you know, if it'll do well or not.
Yeah, I mean, it would be nice to have all that stuff, but Nintendo's not going to put their own people on that, as their own people are busy on the games that sell tens of millions of copies guaranteed every time. And yeah, it's got to be the right partner for them. So, Yeah, I mean, really, like, the best case scenario is them working with someone that's, like, a little outside the norm. You know, a lot of times they've leaned on other Japanese companies like Team Ninja, Capcom, Platinum, Namco to make these sort of games, but they're probably going to be, like, more expensive than these companies like Mercury Steam or Monster Games. And Next Level was a bit of a gamble, but, like, Next Level worked out super well. And I, you know, if I were Nintendo, I'd be looking for teams like that that I could invest in or partially acquire and build up, like, more of a bench of people that can make, like, incredible games. Like, Luigi's Mansion is going to be, I think it's going to be one of those, like, heavy hitter franchises pretty soon here. Like, it's just, it's great to have around Halloween and into the holidays. Like, Luigi's Mansion 3 is such a good game. It seems like the best looking Nintendo Switch game. Like, it's just the art style. It's great. Like, some of the close up elements and cutscenes, like, look like they're a DreamWorks or Pixar movie. Like, a really incredible job with that. And, that's what I would be doing if I was Nintendo. But it's like, you know, how many people out there want to make a Star Fox game right now? It's like, probably not that many, you know? Like, because these companies also have to, you know, play with that gamble of, like, has Star Fox not sold well in recent years because, like, you know, it's just more of, like, a technical marvel for the Super Nintendo and 64? Or is it just that, like, we don't have the right idea? And they have to take that risk. And so, like, I'll put it this way. It'd be a lot easier to find, like, another studio to make a Donkey Kong game or another Mario spinoff than it would be to, you know, get Star Fox up and going again, to get F-Zero up and going again. But I don't know, Nintendo, hit up Monster Games. That's my free advice. They'd be up to the task. It's their whole thing is racing simulation. I think that'd be so much fun for them to, like, kind of tweak their engine and make that work for a fantasy sci-fi sort of game. I don't know. Like, it could be pretty cool.
Yeah. And the thing is you'd be surprised how many companies want to take a stab at some of these Nintendo franchises, because I'm even reading about a story I didn't realize, but there was a company, Vietti or somebody used to work there who left, or after they'd left Nintendo and started their own company, but how they pitched Nintendo an ultra realistic F-Zero game. And it sounds like they were actually listening to it. They made a demo for the Switch, actually. But this is something Game Explain actually cover, which we can link this in the description. But it seemed like it kept becoming this back and forth thing, because Nintendo would just end up being like, yeah, this looks cool, but you don't have enough people. And so they'd be like, okay, so do we get more money and then we get more people and then we come back with this? And they just said it ended up being this very difficult back and forth and difficult to work with them, but it just shows you the interest is there, man. And you know, we see how it paid off with Metroid. I just hope that they're, you know, willing to give some people a chance, because they're not doing anything with these properties. And I understand it means they have to invest in the project, but I just think it's worth, you know, there's, I think, based on how well the Switch has done and how eager people are to buy these games, and especially like you and I have talked about, if they make a Star Fox game or an F-Zero game and there's some sort of online multiplayer factor to it, I think that alone will help sell it. And, you know, I've been saying the same thing with Metroid Prime 4. I think the really cool twist to that game could be that there's an online multiplayer shooter aspect to the game. And I think that would be incredible. If that's why this game's been taking so long, like, that would be absolutely insane. And I think that would help the game sell incredibly well, too. So, you know, it's just, like I said, all in all, I'm just glad Metroid Dread performed as well as it did. I hope the same thing happens with Prime 4. And I hope Nintendo's looking at this and being like, hey, we've got something special here with the Switch. This is a great opportunity for us to find out how much staying power we still have with some of our older franchises. If, you know, if we do release a Star Fox now and it happens to sell like 4 million copies, you know, like, at that point, they might realize, like, hey, we've had something great this entire time and we haven't utilized it.
But there is that fear there of, like, man, what if we make another one and it bombs again? You know, and that's kind of that teetering point that Star Fox and F-Zero were, like, they were internal Nintendo incubated games. And it's just like, there's no way you could really justify spending 5 years making a Star Fox game at this point. For their internal teams, you know, financially speaking. And I say that with tears rolling down my face, because Star Fox Star Fox 64 is the best game on Nintendo 64. It's an undisputed fact, objective reality. And, you know, I would love for Star Fox to return to that glory, but, you know, they tried with Assault, they tried with, you know, the Star Fox Zero, and just, they had the DS one. You know, one might say, stop messing with the controls. People don't really like that stuff, but, you know, that would just be, yeah, it would just be my thing. But
the funny thing is like, I don't even think half of the Star Fox games actually sold that bad, because I don't think Adventures or Assault were like total flops or anything. I think even F-Zero GX managed to sell a million copies, which, you know, again, only 25 million people bought a GameCube. So I'd say that's, it's not bad. So I don't know. I mean, you know, it, which, you know, that'll probably be something we have to discuss at some point, but, you know, I just think if you look at the numbers, and even Star Fox 64 on the 3DS, like, you know, I don't think it was the worst selling thing in the world. I mean, the Legend of Zelda Triforce Heroes.
Yeah, it's and sold as well as, like, Mario Paper Jam and all that stuff. It was also, I think, a launch title, which probably gave it a little bit of a boost. But, like, Star Fox Assault didn't do well. Star Fox Adventures did well, funny enough, but, you know, they got rid of Rare. Man, that has to be like, you know, we'd have to like rank Nintendo's top five biggest mistakes. One was creating their biggest rival in PlayStation. And this is up there. This is up there, letting Rare go. Like, you gotta be like punching yourselves in the head.
Especially when they produced like half of the games. They produced like half of their library, dude.
Yeah, without Rare on the N64, I don't know if like Nintendo would have kept making video games. It's like, dude, come on.
You could argue that on the Super Nintendo too. I mean, like, Sega was really coming with it until Donkey Kong Country kind of just took the world by storm. And that game, you know, again, people probably look back on it and, oh, it sold 10 million copies. That's a lot, but it's not like, you know, like what we see in today's age all the time, like some of these first party PlayStation games. But I just think like what it was for its time was so revolutionary. And that's why I remember showing you an article from IGN that talked about how Donkey Kong Country saved the Super Nintendo. Yes, it didn't like, it's not like the Super Nintendo was doomed to fail or anything, but it just really revitalized
Nintendo, the Genesis,
you know, and really put the Genesis back on
had
the map.
Taken majority market share, near that point, and then, you know, Donkey Kong Country was the thing that kind of took it back. And people thought it was an N64 game, to tell you like how impressive it was at the time. So, but yeah, I mean, the Star Fox games just haven't ever sold particularly well outside of like, you know, ironically, yeah, it's those three. It's the original, it's 64, and it's Star Fox Adventures, and the rest after that were kind of more on the disappointing side. But, you know, again, one might say that, you know, when you look at, they made three more Star Fox games after that, and two of those three have obnoxious control schemes with no options to change them. So, you know, one might say that we could give it another try with some normal controls. How about that?
Yeah, and I think Star Fox Assault done a lot better is an incredible idea. I just think it just is, the on-foot shooter mechanics were just not good at all. And I think the GameCube controller didn't lend itself well to that style of game either. And so, you know, I'd like to see them try and attempt something like that again, or even a Star Fox Adventures, just maybe a little more emphasis on the R-Wing aspects of the game. But, you know, I think there could be something really special there. But, you know, we'll have to get into some lengthy discussion sometime about, one, Nintendo's biggest mistakes, and two, you know, what ideas Nintendo could explore, you know, with some of their franchises that they don't utilize as much as they probably should. But we've got plenty to talk about here on We the People, you know?
Yep. Well, that's about it, folks. Join us next time for more of this.
Like and subscribe. Like and subscribe.